everybody. It's not 12:09, it's 11:09 p.m. And again, as usual, I thought what a wonderful time to start recording a podcast. A little chat, really, because that's what this is, isn't it? We were going to actually have a chat together, my husband and I, and we were watching a programme this evening that he really wanted to watch. So I thought, right, let's wait until that's finished and then I'll just remind him gently that we're going to record this. But no, it just wasn't going to happen. He's absolutely overloaded with work at the moment. He is kind of shutting down, I think, from the overwhelm of everything. He has to go away for business for a couple of weeks as well soon. And yeah, he's just finding it a little bit too much. So I decided that because there's too much going on in my head and I can't wait any longer myself, and this is kind of the conflicts that can happen, I think, when you are, you know, just a couple in general, but especially us both being neurodivergent and with the profiles that we have and the other kind of co-occurring conditions that we have, we're not always aligned. So I'm not sure if I've explained that well, as usual, but yeah, this is definitely one of the difficulties. We both have amazing intentions and ideas, and we always kind of want to do things and talk about things and plan things and scaffold things, but they just don't happen. And it can just be down to executive function. It can just be down to being, again, overloaded and overwhelmed. So many things that can kind of get in the way. So to take that pressure away from him, I've decided to come and just have a little talk by myself, and specifically about the Easter holidays. The reason we both wanted to talk about it is because, you know, we've shared an awful lot in the past about our children and our family experiences, and we just kind of wanted to give an update and also, I don't know, just to share some good news for a change, really. I think that we're aware that the blog and the podcast and everything we do seems to have a kind of negative edge to it, and it's not the intention, because there are so many things about our lives and us as individuals and our children that, you know, are really positive and they're brilliant things. But I think I shared recently, they get overshadowed, sadly, by all the bad stuff. And I don't mean the bad stuff of us necessarily and the children. It's the bad stuff we experience and feel, and the extra barriers and hurdles that we have to navigate because we are different. You know, as I've shared before, there are settings that I crumble in. There are settings I'm really confident in. We each have very spiky profiles, and I was thinking at some point it might be worth me demonstrating, I suppose, visually what that looks like for each of us, because people don't really understand what that means. We all have different strengths and weaknesses as people anyway. But regarding our kind of neurodivergence and the way that we struggle with things like sensory environments and things like that, and again, that can change from day to day, I think it's really hard to explain to people. So I'm going to look into whether I can kind of sort out some visual to help with that. But yeah, I'm just going to back up. So we've just had the Easter holidays with our two children. We have one at home anyway, but the other child has a lot of kind of ups and downs at school, but currently wants to be there. Has a new one-to-one starting, which is really exciting, when he goes back tomorrow, I think. So we don't know much about this person. We do know he's only got this person for a while they sort somebody more permanent out. But, you know, it's good that basically they've managed to sort somebody out so quickly, and he desperately needs it. This is his last chance to really survive in mainstream, and we don't really think specialist provision is right for him either, and that has been said across the board by everybody. So it could be that I end up with another child at home. But for now, we are just seeing how things go and putting everything in that we possibly can to accommodate him and the things that he wants to achieve and experience, and that currently is to be at school with his friends. And, you know, I think I shared before, we were told he's a really high ability student, and so they don't really feel there's anywhere else that will meet his needs. I mean, obviously, we've had him at home for a couple of weeks, and I just say to my husband this evening, I instinctively feel he's going to wind up at home, and I can't say I'm sad about that, because there's just this freedom of having them here and doing our own thing on our own time. But the thing he misses is the children, is the friends. And at the moment, he actually does quite like school and he likes the challenges, I suppose, but he still struggles in a lot of ways because the environment obviously is not really, I don't know what the word would be, to be honest with you. It's not made for people like him and for people like us. It's just not. In fact, my opinion is it's not really for anybody. I don't even think it's really adequate for neurotypicals either. I think that there are a lot of improvements that could be made to accommodate all children. And of course, we focus on SEND children because they have more obvious struggles. And you find that a lot of children who are neurotypical or developmentally kind of where they need to be, or are supposed to be, should I say, they can access things. But again, I was the kind of student who looked like I was really academically able. I mean, I was able, but if I wasn't paying attention, nobody really cared because they didn't know I wasn't paying attention because I internalised it. I'd be off in my own little world having my own thoughts and daydreams and absolutely have no idea what we were actually doing. It's just that I was quite quick at processing. I see, it's really funny because I was saying bad at processing, but I was quite good at quickly detecting things. So if a teacher picked on me and said, you know, oh, what do you think? I could quickly scan a room. I could scan the board. I could quickly look at the book in front of me and I could kind of get a rough idea and blag it. Basically, that's kind of how I've got through a lot of things and in a lot of situations. And in fact, I was even in a meeting recently, and this is absolutely terrible, but it's quite an important meeting, something I do outside of this page. And a colleague of mine was in this meeting and I had absolutely drifted. I was on my phone checking something that took an interest of mine and was researching it when I actually got asked directly for my opinion on something because of my career and, you know, that I would have value to add. And I'm ashamed because I don't normally do this, but, you know, sometimes they're just long and boring and sometimes they seem irrelevant. And even as an adult, I struggle to kind of give everything my attention. I just have no attention span, quite frankly. And especially if it's not something that interests me. And at this point, I didn't feel it was relevant. So I was kind of drifting off. And also sometimes they say things that send me off on tangents because I have to then go research it and check things. And, you know, I imagine a lot of you understand that, to be honest with you. But yeah, I had no idea. And of course, there was nothing on screen or in the room or anything that could kind of remind me. So while they were talking and asking me questions, I quickly texted my friend and just said, like, what have I missed? And I had to try and do that whilst not looking at my phone. And she just quickly gave me a one-word answer as a general theme of what the topic was over. And I just kind of reeled off my opinion on this topic, not knowing if it was relevant whatsoever. And luckily it was. And they thanked me for my input. But thank goodness for her, because if she had not been there to text me kind of outside of this meeting, then, you know, it would have been really embarrassing. I'd have had to have admitted that I didn't know what they were talking about and I drifted off. So, I mean, this happens sometimes because I have my eldest child at home. So I struggle to attend meetings and do things when he's here. But I often, you know, I do get help sometimes from my mum. My husband will sometimes try and be flexible with his work because he's working from home currently to try and cover me, because the work I do is really, really important. So, you know, it's trying to actually make changes. It's trying to actually hold people to account and also, yeah, just try and share our experiences as a family and help people change the systems that we're kind of living with that aren't working. So yeah, that in short is kind of what I do outside of the page. And I feel so guilty sometimes because I have him at home and obviously I'm still going to these meetings. I can't go to the ones to the amount I used to attend because I just physically can't, because I have him to think of. But I suppose one of the benefits of him being a PDAer is you can't sit and have a timetable and a structure and have these kind of regular demands and expectations on him. So yeah, generally he gets a lot of autonomy over the things he does while he's at home. And although we do learn, I try and do it more organically. And, you know, I suppose that kind of works. But what people don't understand is they think he's at home and that I'm just getting all this free time. And the actual reality is not that. And he, even if he's playing a video game or watching television, he wants to kind of do a running commentary all the way through it, and he'll keep calling me. And we had some shopping delivered, so I said, oh, you can play some video game while we bring the shopping in and, you know, clean all the shopping and put it away. And, you know, literally as soon as I walked out of the room, mummy, mummy, quick, come and look at this. Mummy, I've got this. Mummy, mummy. And it might be things I've seen a million times, but he just needs my involvement. And I had a friend here the other day who I've not seen for a long time, and she's not seen the children for a long time. And even, you know, she commented on the fact that, wow, you know, he's really, she didn't use these words, by the way, but, you know, he's really needy. He's quite demanding of me and just needs your undivided attention. And people can't understand that. So they have this perception that you can put him on a game or something he's interested in, and then he'll just leave you to it to go and crack on and get other jobs done. And that's just not the reality. But I have found that, you know, it does give me that freedom to go and put some washing away and do things that once upon a time were absolutely impossible. So, you know, things are definitely improving in that sense. And then you get, you just can't win, because you get some people saying, oh, that's an awful attitude. You know, why would you want to be away? Feel thankful he wants you with him by his side 24/7. And, you know, those other things can wait. But actually, he is home full time and he wants that full time. And I think that's something that's very, very hard to explain to people. Because that is just, I think, I was saying to my husband last night, I think the problem is you explain things to people about your experience and what you go through at home and all that kind of thing. And when you're going out and the difficulties and challenges that we face. And then they will come back with, oh, yeah, just like blah, blah, blah. And it's not actually the same thing at all. But they can only empathise, I suppose, or kind of try and relate to it through their own experience, anything they've experienced. And if they haven't got a relative experience, then they're kind of drawing on something that they deem is similar, because they don't have the comprehension of what you're actually trying to explain to them, because they haven't lived it. So I understand the problem. But the issue for us is it feels really undermining and dismissive when you are going through things and you're trying to explain it to somebody. And then, you know, I've got nothing wrong with, I have no issue with people using lived experience to kind of say they understand what you're going through. I do it all the time, and that's quite a neurodivergent thing. And some people hate it because they think when you then talk about your experience, you're trying to belittle theirs and you're not listening to them. You're making it about you. And actually, for a lot of neurodivergent people, we do it as a way to go, I really get it. And here's an example of what happened to me, and to prove to you that, you know, I really do get it. And here's my experience of that. And, you know, people don't always see that. So, yeah, but I have this issue. It isn't quite the same issue with the children, because when you do try and explain, oh, you know, this happened, or they had a meltdown over this, or I can't go and even go to the toilet because of their need for attention, like I'll be stalked in the toilet. And then people say, oh, yeah, but, you know, that's like all kids. Or, oh, yeah, I had this experience where, and they're not understanding the gravity and the kind of intensity and the frequency and the fact that it's all the time. But again, it then becomes a competition. People think you're comparing and competing, and that there's a winner or a loser. And it's not about that. I think I said to my husband tonight, I think the problem with me is I have been so desperate for empathy and understanding. And I've put so much energy into trying to educate people, and, you know, especially family and friends, of course, because you want and need them to get it, don't you? Especially for your children, but also for us, because we don't feel supported. And I think that's the main thing. And people think they're supporting you by saying these things, and people think they're supporting you by sometimes telling you what a great job you're doing. But actually, support to me isn't that. Support is when we have over the years struggled and things at one point were so, so difficult. And again, it makes it sound really negative, but when things were really, really difficult and we were telling people, when somebody kind of pats you on the head in a really patronising manner, okay, you know, obviously not really doing it, but with their words, by saying things like, oh, you're doing a great job, and then you don't hear from them ever again, and they don't offer to come and help you with the children or even give you an hour to go and get your washing done, or, you know, I don't, again, it's either that they don't understand really the reality you're living, or they just don't care. And I said to my husband, I think that's what the problem has been for me, is we've had years of this kind of challenge where it's been really hard, and I'm not trying to complain. We're so grateful for our children, and then you've got the other side of things of people saying that stuff to you. Be grateful. Of course we are. But that doesn't mean things can't be hard. We went through a phase with the children. Of course, they're 2 years apart in age. And at one point, you know, it was really tough. If you can imagine, you've got two children who, you know, people say, oh, you know, when you've got a couple of kids who are toddlers, it's really, really hard. Well, we've got children who not only went through that phase, but they were developmentally not where their peers were. They had sensory issues. We were still learning about all of these things and about our own neurodivergence. And we were having constant meltdowns and dysregulation, and it was just really hard. And then having to kind of juggle our own needs. And then on top of that, the stuff with the professionals, the dismissiveness from the schools at the time, and then, you know, family and friends not understanding us. And it was just a really, really hard time. And again, it just felt like nobody really saw us, nobody really understood us. And I think at one point I sent videos around to the family, and it's not something I'm proud of, but I was so desperate for them to understand our lived experience of what we were going through. And it's not to paint the children as awful, but you know when people go, oh yeah, but all kids have a bit of a tantrum, and you're like, no, that isn't what this is. You know, this is 2 hours of intense meltdown, and there was nothing that could end it. And my children are PDAers, and they're very easily triggered. Their threat response, their nervous systems are activated, and it can be, you know, very sudden, intense, as I've already said, unpredictable, and there can be no clear reason, and there can be no clear end. And again, it's something that with experience, you start to learn different things and triggers and all that kind of stuff. But at one point, we were really, really struggling. And there was no one to turn to. There was nobody in real life around us. And there was also no professional. And it just felt like people were more, you know, all the time belittling us as parents, like we were doing something wrong. And our children were just brats. And again, this all sounds really negative, and there's so much more to say, and I've not explained it well, as usual. So I know some people will be thinking I sound really dreadful, but, you know, the reality is we have been through a few years where it's been very, very difficult in every way. Like I said, from a health perspective of professionals, from an education perspective, you know, local authorities. I think all the extra things we have to do and fight for that a lot of families wouldn't even be aware of, because guess what? They don't have to do it. They don't even have to think about it. We didn't know this was a reality of life. We didn't know these things existed and that you'd have to go through this stuff. And it's just that's what our story has been. And that's what so many people are experiencing. So we know we're not unique, but it's not mainstream. It's not everybody's experience. And so when people do that thing where, you know, their child might have had a tantrum about something, and they compare that to what you're experiencing and how drained you are. You know, having a child who literally you wake up because he's already triggered from the moment he's woken up, and you're not sure why, and you have to play detective, but you're, you know, kind of tired because you've just woken up with this adrenaline, this start. They don't know what that's like. And again, I get that they're trying to compare it to what they do know. So, oh yeah, that must be like this experience, but it isn't. Because if it was, you wouldn't be trying to get the understanding, because you'd know people understood it. And if people really understood it, they wouldn't say and do the things they say and do, and the stupid suggestions they come out with. I'm literally at the end of my tether. You know, I've been going through quite a bad spell recently with my mental and emotional health, and it is just literally that realisation of, oh my gosh, we're on our own. And I've known it for a long time, but I think, sadly, there's just been some incidents recently and events that have happened recently where it's really obvious to me now that people don't get our children, people don't understand us, and people don't support us and don't support our children. And, you know, my husband, for example, we were supposed to be going to a wedding. We don't do anything. We're not really the most sociable people, but this was quite an important thing for us, with important people that we wanted to kind of see get married. And yeah, it's just got to the point where we've analysed everybody in our families, and the only people who can really have our children are my sister and my mum together for the length of time that's needed. And we've realised that obviously they're going to be there, so we can't both go. And so my husband has now said he won't come and he'll stay at home with children because we can't trust anyone. I mean, we do have a family member who is just lovely and adores the children and said, you know, I'd love to be able to, but I worry myself about my capability. I mean, I love the honesty of that. You've got others that think they know it all and they think that they've got everything right, but then they tell you things that show they have no clue. And then that's very worrying because how are they going to deal with things when they can't even admit to themselves that they don't know what they're doing and they're out of their depth? And then again, people will think, well, that's really awful because you've not given them a chance and this, that and the other. But the truth is we've given people a lot of chances. And over the years, we've asked for people to educate themselves and to please help us and to offer support. But people don't. People aren't interested. So, again, all sounds quite negative. So that's where we're going to turn a little bit into more of a positive. So I said to my husband, I feel that maybe part of the issue with me recently and how I've been feeling is that realisation that, you know, we've been left to this for years and we're alone, apart from a couple of lovely people. And we've got well-meaning people around us, but it doesn't mean they're able to actually help. But over the Easter holidays, and actually it's been probably the last couple of months since my eldest has turned 7, we feel like there has been huge progress and development in a lot of areas for the two children. Still a lot of wobbles and, you know, a lot of issues. So I'm not going to pretend it's all gone because it hasn't. But we've also noticed there are like really huge things now that are changing. And as always, you've got people who you know are going to criticise. I think this is the problem. You can never win because I can say something and I can see people from so many different camps having something to say about what I'm saying. And it's really frustrating. But if you haven't lived it, you're not entitled to an opinion. That's kind of my take on things. But we have family members who say, well, you are entitled to an opinion. And I say, but are you educated in this? Have you got experience of this? Well, no, but everyone can have an opinion. But if it's an uneducated opinion, then it has no value, surely. But anyway, that I digress as usual. But yeah, the frustration that we have is, you know, people then, armchair critics have an awful lot to say. And you hear me say about armchair critics a lot because it's one of the things that really winds me up. It's so easy to sit outside of a situation and have an opinion on it, isn't it? And what you think you would do. But you don't know until you're in it what you would do and what the reality of that situation is. And, you know, so we'll have people saying, oh, it's really awful that you say this about your children, that it was really awful and that, you know, they've made progress. Oh, so they've made progress because it's easier for you. And that's actually not what I'm talking about. It's just as a family, things feel like they're moving in the right direction. And it's not because my children have suddenly, you know, reached an age where, oh, you know, they're not autistic or PDA anymore. Of course they are. But what we're actually finding is that as they are maturing, and they are developing new skills, and that is then kind of working alongside all of the things we put into place. For example, the PDA helpful approaches, like, you know, a low demand household and you just removing the pressure from them, essentially. We're finding that with all of these things combined, life is getting a little bit more enjoyable and easier. And it's never to say I don't love my children or I've never enjoyed having their company. That's not true at all. Like, they're very snuggly, beautiful children. But there are things they've wanted to do that we've had to say no. And again, we've had criticism over that. We've had people say, well, you need to do it. But those people aren't the ones taking our children out and having to see them have meltdowns over everything, putting them into situations we know that they want to do but are unable to do. Or, you know, sometimes things they want to do but they know they're unable to do. Or at the last minute, they for some reason cannot do. And people don't understand that aspect of PDA at all. But they wanted to go to the park, didn't they? Why are they having a meltdown? They're having a meltdown because of the anxiety or the fact that you've turned up at the last minute and all the steps involved in now having to get ready to go to the park. And now it's overwhelmed them. They've gone into either meltdown or shutdown and there's, you know, it's not going to happen now. And people just have no clue of the reality of what you have to go through and what your children have to go through. But we feel like there has been progress made and we can now take a lot more risks. And over the Easter holidays, it's really been quite wonderful, to be honest with you. We have tried a lot of new things and, you know, just been able to do things that the children have wanted to do for ages. They've wanted to go bowling, and I shared that on the page. They wanted to go to the arcade, so we did that too. They wanted to go to a restaurant, and that was something that, you know, we were really anxious about, because when they were very small, we could do things, and then they got to an age where you just couldn't do these things anymore. And again, people say, well, you need to give them those experiences. And you're like, yes, absolutely. But again, we got to a point where both children were having meltdowns all the time. They were just very dysregulated. They weren't coping in any environment. No matter what we prepared, no matter what exit strategy we had, it just wasn't successful for a long time. And the safest thing for everybody was to stay at home. And then when we did start venturing out, it was off peak. So very early, very late, which I've shared before. And we're still doing that, but we've started to kind of now stay out a little bit longer and be around a few more other people and other children. And, you know, they're coping with it. But we're obviously a lot better now at identifying when they are triggered or when they're becoming dysregulated. We obviously have a lot more experience now. And as I said, the children are getting older and they're starting to learn a few things themselves. They're starting to be able to identify things and self-regulate in some situations. It's not completely there. They're still very small and there's a lot to learn. But there has been a huge, huge change in our family dynamic. And I said to my husband, on one level, I've spent a long time feeling so upset that nobody has been there for us, because we feel like that. We feel really alone. And then people will say, well, that's your fault because you could have asked for more help. But the thing is, it's hard to ask for help. We're also neurodivergent. We also knew our children were difficult and that we didn't want people to view them badly either. And also, quite frankly, like I said earlier, a lot of these people are well-meaning, but they actually were proving time and time again they just didn't understand our children and their needs. And when we did give a couple of family members the opportunity, they proved to us that it wasn't safe to leave our children with them. And I think it's really hard, because these are the things that also then break down relationships within the family, because they feel they're being rejected, whereas we have to put our children, you know, we have to put our children first. We can't think about other people's feelings over our children's. At the end of the day, if I have somebody who's trying to be authoritarian with my children to show us how it's really done and is going to traumatise my children, then no, they're not having access to them. But it's really difficult, because then people say, well, shut those people out of your life. But how do you, when those people still are a great support in other ways and they love them? And a lot of the problem is they just don't understand them. But these are a lot of the dilemmas I think a lot of our families like ours really struggle with. But as a family of four, we've just had like the most wonderful time. And some days we're just at home. Some days we're just going in the garden. But some days we manage to get out of the house. And I'm a big believer in not putting your children in situations that they're not going to succeed in or they don't want to be in. I would never drag my children around shopping, for example, if they didn't want to be there and it could be avoided. The restaurant thing has never been for us. We've never thought, oh, you know, wouldn't it be lovely if we could drag them to a restaurant? Because we knew that it wasn't the right setting for them. But when they got to a point where they wanted to do these things and it wasn't an option because of the difficulties and the fact they couldn't, you know, sit nicely in a restaurant, and people might say, well, why does that matter? But it does matter, because, you know, there are certain things you do in restaurants. Like and people will disagree with this, but, you know, I don't agree when people let their children just run around restaurants and disturb other diners. And so when my children were in a phase where they couldn't sit still and they couldn't do these things, I wouldn't take them there. And again, some people are going to criticise that. They're going to say that you're not allowing the child to be themselves. But I was at home in a setting where they were able to do that, or take them to a setting where that was acceptable. You know, I still think it's important to learn that certain places have rules. For example, when I was teaching, we used to do a lot of this kind of work, and one of them was about the swimming pool and the need for rules. And our children naturally hate rules. They hate being told no. They hate being told what to do. They can't stand direct demands and any pressure on them and that kind of thing. But there are some non-negotiables in life, and there are some things that I'm not going to bend on. And so, for example, the swimming pool rules. The swimming pool rules are, you don't run at the side of the swimming pool. And when I asked the children if they could tell me why, they explained, because it's slippery and you could fall and bang your head or fall in the water. So they understood that that was not something they could do there. So If they were unable to do that and be safe in a swimming pool, then I would be irresponsible to take them. And some people would say, well, you know, it's up to them. But it's not. There are some things that, you know, have to be enforced. But in all other areas, we're very laid back and we would never, ever push our children to do anything they didn't want to do. But like I said, when it got to a point where they wanted to do these things, we wanted to be able to give them those opportunities. And so with lots of planning and lots of things put in place, and like I said earlier, the exit strategies, we have been able to achieve such a lot. And it sounds like an awful thing to say, but it actually felt for the first time since they were really small that we were kind of having this typical family life. Of course it isn't completely typical because none of us are typical and we do have our own challenges. For example, we went somewhere today and I found myself getting very agitated. It was hot. There was a lot of noise. The sensory environment absolutely triggered me. At one point, there were a few too many people around and obviously we're in the coronavirus climate. So that freaked me out and I had a bit of a panic attack about that. And then went on and on about it in the car to my husband saying, do you think we're going to get it? Do you think we're going to get it? I'm so scared because we've been really careful to keep away from people, wear our masks, make sure that we're outside or make sure that we're going off peak. And there were just so many people at this one point in the same space. And I didn't have my mask on because there was nobody there prior to that. And then I felt stupid to put my mask on because nobody else was wearing them, which I'm just not going to worry about from now on because not getting it is a priority. But, you know, like I said, we all have our triggers. So no day is going to kind of happen without something, making it a bit of a challenge. But that isn't, you know, that doesn't faze us. But what I'm really actually proud of, I'm proud of my children. I am proud of everything extra they have to kind of overcome with the things that they struggle with. I am so proud of us as well. And I think a lot of parents struggle with this aspect, and we certainly have in the past. But I said to my husband, we need to give ourselves a bit of a pat on the back because this is not just because all of a sudden the children can do this stuff. It's because from very early on, we have been putting all of these strategies and approaches, is actually the correct word, these approaches into place. We've done our research. We've done everything we can to make this environment safe for them. And they're now getting to a point where you can see they're becoming more confident. They're becoming more secure. And there is still a long journey ahead of us, but there are definitely improvements happening. With their confidence and our confidence. We've been able to do things this last couple of weeks we would never have been able to have done. And, you know, we have to be careful. Again, don't stay out too long. Make sure it's a success because you don't want them to have a negative experience when you're out because then it kind of puts them off doing anything. We then come home, we have decompression time, we chill, we might just let them go on games for a while. Then we might go in the garden. You know, everything is just done at their pace and at our pace as a family. And we're not pushing ourselves to do anything or to keep up with the Joneses. We're just doing what makes us comfortable. And I think we've really found our flow actually recently. And it's just been just such a beautiful time off, a beautiful family time off. And I'm really sad that my son is actually going back to school tomorrow. I'm going to miss him a great deal. But this has probably been the first time in our family life that I think we've experienced this. And I said to my husband as well, I was reading about dyspraxia the other day, and both of our children are dyspraxic, and we tried crazy golf today for the first time and they really struggled with that, for an example. There's a lot of things they struggle with, but they're actually having a go at things that before they wouldn't have tried. I'm not going to say one of our children didn't have a bit of a meltdown because he did, but, you know, good on them for trying these things and good on us as well for trying ourselves to do these things with our children and to make it safe and accessible for them. But, I think we've definitely got into our flow. Things are feeling so much calmer and happier. People say that with, you know, children, they need to know their place and this kind of thing. And I haven't really ever believed in it anyway. But as I was also saying to my husband earlier, people say you can't be friends of your children. But in our household, we kind of are. You know, obviously, they know we're their parents and there are things that we kind of are in charge of, but we do treat them with an awful lot of respect. And where possible, we give them choices and we give them some kind of independence, because I think that's important for them. And they're thriving. And as my husband always says, we've had people underestimate our kids and say they can't do this, they can't do that, they won't ever be able to do this, that. And they are. They're doing things and they're growing and they're developing. And you just, as we've said before, you shouldn't write them off. And I just think that's what people are too quick to do. But, you know, they are so proud of themselves. It's wonderful watching them be proud of the things they are achieving. And just going back to the dyspraxia, the challenges they've had to even just overcome with that one condition alone, to see the development they've made is absolutely, oh, it's just amazing. But yet again, it isn't just that they've all of a sudden developed these skills. From very young, we've been putting in a lot of work to help with these things. I did so much research about, you know, things I could do with the children to help improve some of these skills. We have had to do that in very clever ways, because obviously if you do anything directly or do this, boys, it isn't going to work. And the same goes for actually every struggle they've had. Learning from my eldest, everything has had to be so indirect. And I'm really proud of myself, because if I hadn't have found these different ways in, he would still be doing nothing. And it's not because he hasn't got an ability there. It is just because he needed a very different approach to learning, and it needed it to be very kind of personalised to his interests. And so again, that's what we've put in. When they make progress, people are never quick to kind of say, oh, well done, mum and dad, because they kind of make out that all of a sudden something's just clicked for them. And actually, that has never happened with our children. Everything has had to be taught pretty much explicitly. Nothing's been kind of learned naturally, like a lot of the peers around them. And so I think that's another thing that's a bit hurtful and undermining from other people sometimes. They don't realise what you have to put in that's extra. And they just think that's you being a martyr parent and that you're somehow belittling their parenting. And you're not at all, but it is a different experience. And we have family members whose children can do things. They've been able to climb and do things from so young. And they did have that natural ability. And their parents didn't have to worry about them the same way we had to worry about ours. And we've had to put so much in to get our children to where they are, to be able to hop and to jump and to be able to catch a ball. And so those milestones for us are just mega, as my youngest would say, mega. And then people don't understand why you celebrate it. And then when you do celebrate it, they either belittle it because, oh, well, children can normally do that by this age, or they then think that you're bringing attention to it to kind of be the martyr parent. And you just can't win, really, can you? But from an internal perspective, we as a family are really, really happy. And I feel like, although I know that we will go through phases where it's going to be tough, we still have daily challenges. But it's made me feel so much more positive. And I'm really proud of the four of us, to be honest with you, and everything that we've worked hard as a family to achieve. And I really am excited to kind of see how things develop. And it's lovely to also be at a point where, although there are times when things are really hard, especially emotionally and mentally, we didn't get the help that we wanted, but we're now at a point where we don't feel we need it. And we've done all this by ourselves. And yeah, I think, again, I'm just going to end it with, we're really proud of ourselves. There's so much more to say I haven't covered, but I'm going to end it there because it's late. It's now 11:49 and I'm going to start waffling even more than I already have done. So I'm going to sign off and I will speak to you soon. Take care.